280K and 250K resistors on them, which took up more than half of the circuit area. As diffused resistors, because your diffused resistors are normally the order of 300 ohms per square or thereabouts. And so we took that as a vehicle to integrate the implantation process with the bipolar processing, so that the parameters of both were maintained. As I say, you know, that normal bipolar processing is all high temperature processing, and of course the implant process, we want to stay away from that for the parameters we have there. So we took that circuit and developed the process in order to get those resistors in and have them maintain the characteristic we're shooting for. We determined that kind of implant had to be done after the emitter implant, because that's the last last high temperature step, and the next one, which is the sintering of the contact, is a 500 degree step. So that looked all right. So we took their mask set and took out the two large resistors, and then put in the two or the four resistors, and put in the four implanted resistors, and of course that was the difference in day and night, of course, in the area that they took, but I mean we still had to use the same area in order to have that mask set. So we put those in and determined what the parameters needed to be to meet their specs. And of course also the other thing, that these two resistors had to be had to balance with temperature. In other words, the ratio of the two had to remain constant with temperature. So, and they also had to remain constant with one of the diffused resistors in the circuit, as I recall. And that we found was easily attainable with the implant, since the actual concentration of the implant is of the same order, or the same value as the diffused resistor, but it's real thin. And for that reason, for the you get the high ohms per square. So the processes we looked at were anywhere from a K ohm per square up to about 10 K ohm per square. And when you get up to 10 K ohm per square, you've got some problems, because the stability with voltage is not that good, because they're so thin that the substrate almost acts like a gate to a MOS transistor, and you'd squeeze the depletion layer back, and the values of the resistor changes. So, so most of the implants that we did, and what we did in the circuit, I think we're down around 3 or 4 K ohm per square. And at that point, the voltage coefficients almost matched exactly the ones in the diffused resistor, and of course the balance of the resistors, the two implanted resistors, absolutely tracked, you know. There was no problem. And we took the, and I must say we had a bit of a problem getting implant into our production area. Nowhere as easy as it was MOSTEC. I guess there was always yet that background feeling that they're not going to be stable because of the damage, and I'm not sure what it is, or just the fact that it's a change of technology, you know. But we had we had a lot of difficulty, and mm-hmm. so I thought, well, let's try another one and see if it works. And so we took a T2L circuit.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And changed the resistor pattern to make it a low voltage.
Yes.
T2L.
Yes.
Which had high resistance.
Okay.
And we ran the same process. So mm-hmm. you know, we put okay. the resistors in after okay. after the emitter, and they got annealed mm-hmm. with the sinter mm-hmm. process.
Mm-hmm.
So it worked out really nice.
Okay.
And that circuit ran like a really was well. And the fellow that was responsible for the circuit couldn't believe what was happening.
Uh-huh.
And he said he was going to make arrangements to get that in.
Okay.
And then okay. someone upstairs made the decision we're going to get out of the T2L business.
Okay. So that was in what, 1970?
Which we did.
Okay.
But anyway, we finally did get the implanted okay. resistor okay. into the process, and they say, now you go and anytime you need an implanted component, boy, you get it there.
Okay.
They've got three implanters,
okay.
and they're really tied into that process.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the TTL circuit story was 1917 and 1971? I was wondering about the time frame for the TTL circuit.
Yeah, that had to be in the... '69 to '71, someplace in that frame. We were well along in what we had been doing in the plant program,
mm.
and as I say, we were in fact we had our own accelerators implanter already installed.
Okay. Okay.
When we tried to get this
okay.
into
because
we offered them.
Okay.
The opportunity to, you know, to do it.
Okay. Okay.
And it was a long haul, but we finally got over the hump.
I think it seems to me the story in many places, that I think in Silicon Valley it was the same thing. Many manufacturing people had no interest in iron implantation, and it took them 5-6 years to really get it right,
yeah,
and use it in production. So actually, you published an article with Bob Palmer and Jack McDougall in Electronics,
yeah,
in 1970.
Yep.
And I was wondering what's the story behind it, and also what were the reactions to this paper.
We at that time had already done the depletion gate or
okay.
loads,
okay,
and knew that that's the next step that MOSTEC
okay.
was going to
okay.
design
okay.
in their circuits.
Okay.
And one of the reasons for the article was mm-hmm. really to generate interest,
okay,
business purposes.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
So
okay.
that's fine. We still
course.
Were in the position anytime you can
of course, yeah. uh-huh.
put the process forward. Well, that's good.
Yeah,
so
certainly.
Yeah, we wrote the article and it went over quite well. We got a lot of good responses from it.
Okay.
And,
uh-huh.
In fact, Bob said that there was someone who really, really blacklisted the implantation.
mm-hmm.
Called him up and said, "Hey, you know, maybe you have got something there."
Yeah, because so. I talked to Jim Gibbons.
Yeah.
Stafford guy, so I know him fairly well. And he told me that for him, this threshold voltage work that you did was really the killer application. I mean, that's basically what was the killer application for an ion implantation. I mean, that's the thing that proved that ion implantation was made possible things that were not possible by other technologies.
Mm-hmm.
And according to him, that's really the time when ion implantation got accepted and adopted by many companies. So that was a critical
yeah.
piece of work in critical article too.
Yeah. Good.
And actually told me that he was very jealous. that he had not found this this application or something.
Yeah, great.
Let's see. I was wondering whether you'd like to talk about the sale of Sprint to General Cable in 1971, and talk about the strike, and talk about the downturn of the semiconductor business.
I don't think I can tell you too much about that. I think that was just kind of a decision of R.C. Sprague. He was getting along. He wanted to get out of the business. But he still, see, John was president at that time. And I think he, part of the deal would be that they would still maintain John and the system as it was. So, I kind of think he was interested in just kind of sitting back and feeling secure that Sprague Electric would still exist. And as far as our end of in the research and development, we didn't see a lot of change due to that. In fact, they, I was amazed. Got an invite to go down to their R&D department. And so I took Sid Ross, who was one of the senior scientists at Sprague, he's an organic chemist. And hasn't really been involved in semiconductors except some things in resists and, what have you. But anyway, he and I went down. And we got down there and we were ushered into the office of the director of research. Very plush office. And when we walked out, we'd found out that what the director of research Cable does is make arrangements to take friends out on a big plush boat they have. Never once did we hear anything about research projects. And Sid and I came back all the way. We weren't sure what we really thought that things were really going to go downhill for us if that's if that's the condition. But General Cable, by and large, I think, independent of that, did some pretty good work in the area of silicon dioxide processing for what am I looking for? For cables, for electrical transmission of, or not electrical, but light transmission of electrical data. I'm not sure whatever happened to that. I mean, I haven't heard a thing, or boy, for a long time after, didn't hear anything about it. But I did have a chance to talk to some of the people there in the lab, and quite frankly, they seemed pretty competent people, and I thought they were. Project they were working on pretty good. I mean, none of them had any. Well, the silicon work it may have been something we could have been interested in for producing transformers for electrical to light for into the optics. We could have done something there, but. Strange lab. Anyway, but as I say, by and large, even independent of that, we didn't see much change in our direction. And we continued on with the programs we had.
And there was only, what were the main orientations in semiconductor research at Sprague in the 1970s? What were the main orientations in semiconductor research at Sprague?
In 1970s, in the 70s, the mid to, oh, no, the first, actually the first part to the mid, was really a down slope for us.
Okay.
Because that's when a decision was made that the semiconductor research should move to Worcester.
Okay.
And that didn't fare too well for us because some of the people in the research group just didn't want to move out of the Williamstown area. And so what resulted was 1, 2, 3, 4 of us actually moved to Worcester. One of them was John, the other one was John McDougall, Paul Rowan, and a young fellow named Ole Tikal, and myself. And when we got to Worcester, we really didn't function anymore as a research group. We kind of functioned as put out the fire individuals for processes that were going on in the lab. And so we all, I guess I did more chemistry in that time than I'd really done for some period of time. But Paul got involved in the packaging group. At that time, Sprague was doing their own packaging. In fact, we had a an installation in Juarez, Mexico, where we were doing our packaging and had all sorts of problems in that area. And so he was kind of given the assignment of trying to straighten some of that out, which which he worked at for a while. John got involved with the semiconductor process area, which in some cases worked very well because he got involved in really bringing the implantation process up to the level that it should be, where it was thick, where it was deficient, and I kind of got involved in a lot of areas of failure analysis. In fact, I think I brought some of the chemistry. I was instrumental in bringing the first scanning electron microscope into the section to really look and analyze failures and set up that group. I worked pretty closely with the quality control and reliability people, and also some work with the packaging area with Paul, and kind of continued on in that phase until I was asked to take over the quality and reliability function, which I did because I saw a lot of deficiencies there, and I thought maybe I could bring some help. that group had always been run by individuals who knew specifications mm-hmm. and how to write them and what have mm-hmm. you, but didn't understand what they meant.
Okay, that's a problem.
and some of these people were good friends of mine. I don't say that mm-hmm. To be nasty. I just say that's okay. just a fact, you know. And I think it's unfortunate that it should happen, but yeah. mm-hmm. because I got there, and one of the first things I did is I closed the plant down because they were running a process which was introducing impurities and causing failures on the line. I just shut them down, uh-huh. and I got a lot of static for that. But uh-huh. we also got the process taken okay. care of. Okay. I mean, I got okay. in there and we okay. worked at it and got it straightened out, okay. put together, and then okay. we put out some good product. Okay. I did the same thing for IBM. I almost shut them down. They were a big customer of ours.
Yes.
One of the products they brought from us was called a 5712. Mm-hmm. It was a switch. Mm-hmm. And in going through it, we used to, looking at the mm-hmm. back at the records, we mm-hmm. had a fairly high failure rate mm-hmm. on that okay. part. And we used okay. to get back these failures and, mm-hmm. and look at them and they'd say, well, you got a corrosion problem. And mm-hmm. so I got in evaluated some of it, and it was a corrosion problem. Mm-hmm. So I says, being me, I says, I'm not here to provide a solution for the mm-hmm. For the effects. I'm here to find out what's causing the effects. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. did a pretty thorough mm-hmm. search and turned up mm-hmm. knowing a bit of chemistry about epoxy systems, since I'm an old shell man. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Yeah, I determined that a real problem mm-hmm. is just related to the diatach adhesive, which is an mm-hmm. epoxy, mm-hmm. a silver-loaded epoxy. Mm-hmm. Which, as most chemists know, is pretty loaded with chlorine mm-hmm. or chloride. And so when you would assemble the part mm-hmm. And put it to moisture testing, mm-hmm. this is specifically with mm-hmm. with plastic packages, which mm-hmm. are mm-hmm. which are pervious to moisture. Mm-hmm. You leach the chloride out, and it just comes around the frame and up mm-hmm. uh-huh. under the chip,
okay.
And it just loves that aluminum, you know. Okay. And, uh-huh. So I found that we did some experiments to really prove that that was a problem, okay. and how it was happening. Uh-huh. And so then I called up IBM to set up a meeting, and I said, I'm not going to ship you any more 5712s. I said, this is what we're going to do, and this is why we're going to do it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we laid the whole thing out, the program that we'd run to determine what it was, okay. and the solution that we had.
Okay.
And boy, I never saw so many angry faces in all my life. IBM said, you can't do that. He said, you've got to do this. I mean, they've got a specific way of doing things.
Okay.
And independent of what the problem is, uh-huh. if it hurts them or not, they still want to do it that way.
Oh, I see.
And they said, you got to put up three or four lots. I mean, you got to continue to ship and put up three or four lots uh-huh. of your new process, and we've got to fully evaluate that, and you've got to do such and such with it. And they're talking 6 months down the line. Really, to do that. Uh-huh. And I said, nope, you're going to have to find yourself a new vendor. Uh-huh. Well, we're the only one to make that part. And uh-huh. so we left there with the agreement that, uh-huh. that we would ship them parts with the new part and they would evaluate them as okay. quick as they could. And boy, I guess it must have been a year or so later, I was talking to one of the guys in their quality department. He said, boy, She said, you sure had guts to tell us you were going to ship parts. And and he said, but that was the best decision that you ever made. He said, you saved us millions.
Okay. So then that game remained a good customer.
So they, well, I don't think we make that kind of parts, and we don't.
Okay.
I don't think we have them as a customer anymore.
Okay.
And I got to be careful. I haven't really been closely associated with with this for a number of years.
Okay.
But that was when it was still Sprague.
Okay.
Before it was Allegro.
Okay.
And
okay.
I really don't think we Allegro ships them any parts.
Okay. Okay.
But that. That was kind of the way I ran the QC department. The specifications are fine, but they've got to mean something. I mean, yeah, they have a basic, you just don't write them to write them. And, that's just the way I operate. You know? So, I stayed on there as the Director of Quality and Assurance and Reliability until 85, I guess, and then I was asked to take over the VP of the other Sprague research, at the pastor end of it.
Oh, I see, okay.
And so I did that until I retired in 89.
Okay.
And then I remained on as a consultant, primarily for Allegro.
To the semiconductor side, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Since that was the old semiconductor division, and and I stayed on with them, and trying to remember, I 95. I guess I stayed on till about 96. So.
Oh, okay.
That was about five or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that I needed to take some time to really spend with my wife. I mean, she'd been so good and really supported me all the way. So decided we'd take some time off and do some traveling.
Okay. Okay.
And we did a little bit, but unfortunately I lost her.
So would you
what's
like,
next?
What's next? And maybe we could talk a little bit about chemistry and semiconductors.
Hmm.
I had a series of questions here. And I was wondering whether you would have any remarks. So.
The patent on the
I was thinking about the patent, and I was also
on the Hall about, element. Yeah,
I was thinking about this as well. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So this, I filed and got that patent. It was a patent to allow data transmission. In a parallel method rather than series.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which means I had a number of them lined up with various techniques for providing the magnetic fields for the for the unit.
Okay.
And I thought it was a good patent, but I don't think they ever used it.
Okay.
I think we. I think there are more and more chemists getting involved with the semiconductor industry.
Okay.
And I kind of think that's a must.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And I really think the semiconductor industry would have advanced even faster than it has had we had good chemists in place.
Okay.
Because there's so much in the processing that involves surfaces, identification of contaminants in, mm-hmm. in processing materials,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Different types of etching and what have you. And they all, quite frankly, mm-hmm. just about anything you can think of mm-hmm. in the generation of a semiconductor mm-hmm. relates to chemistry.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So I really would like to see even more chemists okay. in there okay. than we okay. presently
okay.
have. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. As I look at it, as far as semiconductors have gone, I mm-hmm. think it is still a real, real mm-hmm. great area mm-hmm. with lots of things to do mm-hmm. in chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many ways of advancing, I think, mm-hmm. what's presently going on. So mm-hmm. I would really like to see mm-hmm. more chemistry. Mm-hmm. And I would also like to see,
mm-hmm.
and maybe it's happening now, I mm-hmm. don't know,
mm-hmm.
I'd like to see more of our chemists, our technical people,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
come out of school to the industry
mm-hmm.
and have a better
mm-hmm.
approach to problems.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is
mm-hmm.
I've seen so much of the